You're listening to Public Radio from Western Michigan University, WMUK 102.1 FM. I'm Arlene McMichael with a special interview with U.S. Republican Representative Fred Upton of St. Joseph. He was on Capitol Hill yesterday when a mob ambushed the building. Welcome back to WMUK.
Well, thanks. Always a pleasure to be with you all. Appreciate what you do. And I'm actually wearing my Western Michigan University face mask as I come back to Michigan from a very crazy and hectic day yesterday, for sure.
There's been a lot reported so far. We're hoping you can give us an inside look and project on topics that advance what we know and some questions that I know some citizens are wondering. Where were you when Trump protesters stormed the Capitol, and what did you see?
Well, I'd been in the Capitol a little bit earlier in the morning, and I walked back to my office. So the debate on the certification of the states began at 1 o'clock, but the word was out that because it was a joint session, you know, all 433 members of the House and 199 members of the Senate were going to be together for a joint session, that they were really asking no more than about 90 or so of us to be on the House floor because of COVID, because of social distancing. And so I decided I would do that. I would watch the proceedings in my office across the street on C-SPAN. And obviously, when it came time to vote or actually participate in the debate, which I was planning to do later, I would actually be on the House floor. So I was watching the debate. All of a sudden, I saw members scatter. I saw some confusion with the speaker. It wasn't Pelosi then. She had already been escorted out, so there was another individual that was there in the speaker's chair, but I knew exactly what was happening because my office actually has a balcony. I'd been out on the balcony for a little bit earlier, even though it was cold and brisk. I saw all the protesters going down to the White House to start and then march back. So there was a sizable crowd. You could hear the noise, and I knew that something had happened. And of course, it turned out that they had broken into the Capitol itself and actually got onto the House floor.
Now, did you find out that they had made it into the House floor by watching the news?
Yeah, well, I heard from a number of my colleagues. We got a police report as well, and we all have our iPhones, and there was an immediate launch of information from the Capitol Police telling us to stand down, to lock down, which I did in my building. But yeah, we saw that.
What was your reaction? I saw that you tweeted that you were shell shocked. But what was your reaction?
Well,
were you frightened that they may come to you?
Well, that's what we were told. I mean, they had evacuated. First of all, we knew that they had through their reports throughout the day that they had discovered the bomb devices. I think they had disarmed a couple of them. They had evacuated the Cannon House office building. There's three House office buildings, so that's one of the three that they evacuated and was evacuated the entire day. And, you know, they warned us to stay out of the hallways, to stay in our office. I was there by myself. I went deadbolted the door. And, of course, I could hear it as I went out on my balcony and actually witnessed not only Independence Avenue being completely shut down, but the troops of reinforcements, the Virginia State troopers, the ATF guys. I mean, this was a crowd of well over 100,000 folks, and the police, the Capitol Hill police, were completely overwhelmed.
I guess what I'm trying to get at, were you at all frightened at any point?
I felt that I was secure. It was, I've been through some of this before. 9/11,
okay.
I live close to where there are Republicans were shot at the baseball game a few years ago in my neighborhood where I live in Virginia as well.
And now let's get kind of to the things that people probably really want to know about. How much responsibility rests with President Trump or any other Republican leaders for saying that the election was stolen?
Well, a couple things. From day one, really, once the election was called, I called to congratulate President-elect Biden. Back on November 7th, I watched the president's speech that he gave on the Ellipse to the big crowd yesterday morning and felt that he did inspire the crowd to charge the Capitol. They broke through the police lines. They climbed the scaffolding, which is being up and around the Capitol to get ready for the inauguration. They broke through the windows. We saw all of that live. It was they actually built a gallows on the east side of the Capitol. There's pictures of that that you can see on Grudge. And, you know, as I walked back into the Capitol to vote, listen to the debate later on into the early morning on Thursday, the broken glass, the ATF folks that are there, the police, all, you know, they were in literally hand-to-hand combat. And, of course, talking to my colleagues that were there, a number from Michigan that were in the chamber that were told to get on the floor to grab a gas mask, to run to an undisclosed location where they thought they could be safe. I mean, all of those thoughts go through our minds. But, you know, from the get-go, the president was looking, I think, to see something like this happen. Tragically, four people died.
One woman was shot inside the Capitol building by police as a mob tried to break into a barricaded door. Meanwhile, three other people died from medical emergencies around the Capitol grounds.
They're saying that four people died, and one was shot and killed as she tried to get into the House chamber.
You're clearly saying the president bears a large responsibility for what occurred on the Capitol. You're clearly saying that the responsibility rests with him.
Yeah, he clearly inspired what happened. It quickly got out of hand. There's no question about that.
Yeah, okay. Knowing that, you were quoted by a reporter from Business Insider saying that not following the practice of a peaceful transfer of power will be President Trump's legacy. Has that refusal done lasting damage to our system of government?
Well, you know, I think it was important yesterday that when the dust cleared, when they were able to clear the broken glass, the blood, that the House and Senate would come back into session to complete the job that the Constitution demands, to show the world, certainly our nation, that the wheels of democracy are not going to be stopped. And we worked until 3 or 3:30 this morning to get the job done and to conclude that. That's the signal that I think was very important that we sent.
The head of the National Association of Manufacturers and the governor of Vermont, who is a critic of President Trump but still a Republican, have both said that invoking the 25th Amendment should be considered. Would you advise Vice President Pence and anyone else involved to start the process of invoking the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office?
Well, as I understand it, there is some talk about that, certainly back in Washington. It's not anything that the House member would deal with. It has to be initiated by the vice president, and he has to get the majority of the cabinet behind him. There are less than, of course, 2 weeks left in the Trump presidency. I don't know how long this would take, but it's from press reports, it appears as though there's some consideration. I would probably consider it unlikely. Vice President Pence has been a very loyal vice president, for sure, to the president. I would note this morning I heard that Mark Short, who is Pence's chief of staff, has been banned from the White House. His credentials have been pulled because of his advice that he gave to Pence to follow through with the Constitution. So,
with his advice to follow through with the Constitution in regards to the 25th Amendment and trying to remove the president?
Mark Short advised the vice president that he should follow through and with the certification of all the states. That was done yesterday. Remember, the vice president is the presiding officer during all of this. So even though President Trump wanted him to send the results back to the states, Mark Short was one that advised the vice president, no, you can't do that. That's not really within your authority. You need to follow the Constitution. You need to follow the process and not deviate from that, which is the tact that the vice president took. But because of that advice that Mark Short gave, his credentials to work at his White House office have been canceled.
I'd like to return back to my question. I realize whether or not it'll happen or not in regards to starting the process of invoking the...
Yeah, I really don't want to speculate. I mean, I've been up 24 hours in a row.
Yeah, I understand. You know, so on that issue, you'd rather not speculate. I understand.
Yeah, I just, you know, apparently there's some consideration, but again, as a House member, we have no input in terms of what
okay.
the Vice President might
okay.
do as he charges.
Okay, let's quickly move through some of the other questions. Are you concerned about the time between now and January 20th, as long as President Trump is still in office?
Well, you know, the Congress now is adjourned until the 20th of January. We'll be out all next week, leading through the MLK. National holiday. You know, the results, you know, as we know and watched yesterday, the president was very firm in trying to get this thing reversed. At the end of the day, none of the 50 states in the District of Columbia's voting results were changed, as was predicted. And really, the president has no other options here to proceed. And apparently he did send a tweet out or some type of message early this morning that he was, in essence, to a large degree, conceding that there would be a transfer of power. That's what we all want to see happen.
Okay.
We need. So I don't expect it. You know, I don't. You know, again, we're out of session. We're all coming back to our districts.
Are there any changes needed in law or even the Constitution to ensure that there is a peaceful transfer of power in the future?
Well, you know, historically, of course, that's what's always happened. It's not been an issue. There's a transition office that's funded. The president actually signed the legislation that funded it. It's, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars for the new staff to be in to work with the new cabinet members, the political appointees that are there, the briefings that have to be, so that we try to make that transition as seamless as possible. It's something that our nation is known for. So, you know, whether it would take, I don't know that it would take a constitutional amendment to make some changes. I would think that, you know, if there are some glitches that we should look at, we could certainly look at legislation that I suspect the new president, President Biden, would welcome and accept.
Uh-huh. But do you personally advocate for some or would like to see some?
Yeah, I don't. Well, I think we'll see how this works. But, you know, we can always be constructive. We can always see if there's something that we need to take a look at. But I don't think it would need a constitutional amendment. Remember, that requires a 2/3 vote of the House and the Senate, a ratification by the states. Passing a law is a lot easier than a constitutional amendment.
Absolutely. I know that certainly a number of African Americans that I spoke with yesterday, you can even see it on social media, they contrast how when Black Lives Matter protesters were at the Capitol, you know, how their reception was versus what happened yesterday, where it appears to be almost like a total lapse of security. And there's some sense that if it were Black protesters predominantly, that they would have been tear gassed by now or something like that. How do you respond to that sentiment of African Americans?
Well, I understand it. And that's why we need justice reform. It's one of the reasons why I participated in a number of peaceful marches here in Michigan in favor of Black Lives Matter. And I'm hopeful and encouraged that we'll see legislation move forward that in essence got stalled because of differences between the House and the Senate this last year. You know, I was not in Washington when they had the real disturbances there, the violence, the destruction of property. I know that a number of arrests were made yesterday at the Capitol. I know that there will be a number of more arrests that will be made as people look at the videos, the individual in Pelosi's office, et cetera. I know that chemical irritants apparently were used to break through the police lines. There were a lot of us, Republicans and Democrats, that asked, why didn't they use tear gas initially when they broke through the police lines? I know they used some Bang flashbang things. Obviously, one person, unfortunately, was shot and killed as she tried to get into the House chamber. I think all these things are going to be looked at, but it just it reminds us as well that we need some reforms, and racism, yeah, it still exists. I mean, the Confederate flags that were there in the Capitol yesterday, some of the chants that were made by some of the folks, not at all encouraging.
We talked a little earlier about some ways that you've been willing to kind of stand apart from some of your Republican colleagues. So what I want to know, and what some people want to know, is where is the accountability when it comes to taking an oath to serve the will of the people, particularly in this case, when it comes to election results? Who was having those crucial conversations when it comes to, you know, your fellow Congressmen and women? And are you having those conversations privately, publicly?
Yep. Well, certainly we had a very spirited debate. We had a Republican conference of our 210 or so members earlier this week. I spoke specifically about why the Michigan numbers, and you'll remember that it was 154,000 vote difference between Biden and Trump. And I talked specifically about why Michigan's results needed to stand as certified by all 83 counties. And privately, I talked to a number of colleagues as well. And at the end of the day, at the end of the process, the Michigan certification was not challenged. And debate occur on that issue in the joint session, let alone a vote. And, you know, as I look at the other challenges that were made, there were two that we debated, the state of Arizona and the state of Pennsylvania. A majority of the Michigan Republicans in our delegation, four of the seven, voted to certify those states. And, of course, when you look at the final result on the House floor, the decertification effort failed by a 2-3-1 margin on the House floor, and, of course, overwhelming in the Senate. I don't know what the vote count there was, but it was probably in the neighborhood of 85-15 when they voted. So, you know, these are discussions that we need to continue. And, you know, I'll just say, as a member of the Problem Solvers Caucus, this is a bipartisan group of what will be nearly 60 members now in this Congress. We have a very closely divided Congress. You know, in essence, about 10 votes separates Pelosi's majority and the Kevin McCarthy Republican minority. In the Senate, of course, it's 50-50 with Harris, Vice President Harris, to be being the tie-breaking vote, giving the Democrats the control. The only way you're going to get something done is to work together, which is what our Problem Solvers Caucus is all about. And whether it be, you know, whatever issue, we've got working groups that are there. We're going to be reaching out. We have seats at the leadership table. We have a little bigger baseball bat than we had last year when the margin was broader. And we also have more members than we had last year, too.
We're getting ready to close. And as I do, in the state of Michigan, we've had our own violent protests. We've had some at our Capitol building in Lansing. We've had some in Kalamazoo. The question that some have posed to me is that the lack of response when violent protests took place at Michigan's Capitol and in Kalamazoo, did that help fuel the terrorist activity at the nation's Capitol?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that we were all disturbed at what happened at the Michigan Capitol and very disturbed with the possibility that, thank goodness, that the arrest of nearly, a dozen folks that were plotting to kidnap our governor and who knows what else. Swift action took place. I expect justice to be delivered as that trial proceeds. But even yesterday, we had this violence at the Capitol, but there were a number of other state capitals around the country that were also violated. I know the state of Washington, I think there were 3, 4, 5 different capitals that were stormed. So, you know, a signal has to be sent that we're a democracy. We can have issues with each other, but that ought to be a debate and vote. We shouldn't resort to fists or explosives, and certainly the tragedy yesterday of literally four people that died during the massive protest in Washington. That's not who we are. That's not the signal that we want to send, not only to our own people, but to folks around the world.
That's a good place to leave our conversation, talking about democracy. I know there's been talk about maybe adding another political party, breaking off from the Republican Party, some people feeling that there's a certain segment that's a little extremist. Do you support the formation of this other party? Because do you, like, not kind of connect with those more extremists? Does the Republican Party still believe in democracy? Some people are wondering.
Well, I certainly do. I don't know that there's any serious talk. I've not heard any of another splinter group from within the Republican Party that's going someplace else. You know, we, in essence, have a two-party system. There is, of the 433 members of the House, we no longer have independents even. We had two independents in the last Congress, Justin, both actually from Michigan, Justin Amash and Paul Mitchell, who switched parties at the end. But there's really no talk about another party affiliation that members would be part of, at least in the U.S. House.
Representative Upton, thank you so much for your time. And do get some rest.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
You've been listening to an interview with U.S. Republican Representative Fred Upton of St. Joseph. He was on Capitol Hill yesterday when a mob ambushed the Capitol. For WMUK, I'm Arlene McMichael.